The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
I'm joined by Joan Mulvihill, who is a digitalization lead at Siemens, Gabia Gadavascacha, who is political correspondent with The Independent, and Pat Rabbit, former leader of the Labour Party. It is wall-to-wall politics, unsurprisingly, given that we are in the throes of an election campaign. We will get into the state of the parties generally. Before that, Pat, we were talking before the break there to Nicola Tallant about Gerry the Monk Hodge running for election. Do you see this as a good or a bad thing? Is it evidence that everybody should have access to the democratic system, or would you have concerns?
Well, it certainly reverses the old De Valera thing about put him in to get him out. I don't think it's funny. I find it hard on the one hand to rule out any citizen's right to contest an election. But in circumstances where association with the criminal underworld has established a plague across communities in every city and town in this country through the drugs menace, I think that's out of bounds. I don't think middle-class Ireland fully appreciates the damage that has been done to the fabric of communities, especially in working-class areas, by the menace of drugs.
Although middle-class Ireland funds a lot of it.
It does, and you know, there are prominent people in middle-class Ireland who are weekend users and see no conflict in that. But, I think the idea is bonkers. I would have more confidence in the people of inner city Dublin that they'll express their view on polling day.
We used to have, maybe we still do, that if you were a bankrupt, you were rejected from your seat in the Dáil. Should we have similar legislation in relation to crime?
I don't think it typically arises. I mean,
but we've had a number of TDs who have fairly significant criminal convictions in their past.
You would have to then start graduating what crime rules you out of contesting, and there are misdemeanors that can be crimes, and I think to rule people out because of that would be wrong.
There are 600 other people running for election around the country, and north of 600 other people running for election around the country. So let us look to some of those and how the various different parties are doing. Gabia, you did a piece for the Sunday Independent looking at the sort of the week that was, highs and lows, and infighting seems to be the theme.
Yeah, very much so. And I mean, even yesterday, it really quite reached fever pitch. I think every second day we've had a more significant deepening of this row between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. Yesterday, Willie O'Dea saying Helen McEntee, worst minister for justice in the history of the state. I mean, surely all the gloves are off now. And of course, this comes as the latest development to this sexism row between Helen McEntee and some figures in Fianna Fáil. Jim O'Callaghan, of course, on TV programme during the week, standing beside her saying, well, look, you adapted plans and proposals only after I put them forward first. She came out the morning after and said, you know, lots of women around the country are familiar with men taking credit for their work. James Brown then was on this very radio station, and he sort of pointed to how he brought through half of legislation in the Department of Justice because Simon Harris was in there and Heather Humphreys was in there. And of course, Helen McEntee was on maternity leave. Now, he didn't bring up the maternity leave point, but
it's fairly implicit, I would have thought.
We can read between the lines. And so sources close to the minister are firing back and saying, look, this is just unbelievable stuff. Certainly, I think what Jim O'Callaghan said rubbed people particularly the wrong way. And this is only days after party leader Micheál Martin was out on the Indo Daily podcast saying we need to have a halt to this scrapping and arguing, and sources telling me within the party that it's all Fine Gael's fault. But in fairness, Fianna Fáil have also been given it both barrels. And why all this is relevant is because, of course, they've just spent 4 years in government together, and more likely than not, in a couple of weeks' time, they will be back in government together again.
And the piece with Niamh Horan interviewing Simon Harris, where she says, this brings me to the political attacks. Micheál Martin has just said, Fine Gael seem to be strategically deciding to target Fianna Fáil from Sinn Féin, and I don't get that. And Simon Harris responds, I think there was a sentence after that when he then went on to attack Fine Gael, right? Mm-hmm. Seems to be a tension here, Joan.
There is a tension, but I don't think there's a row. I mean, you said
it's waddling and quacking like a row.
It's not really. It's the political banter that I'd expect. a week and a half out from a general election. They're going to have to try and differentiate themselves. Everyone's trying to take credit for everything. But in the end, and I've noticed this recently, particularly with ministers rather than regular TDs, ministers get to claim certain achievements very specifically on a national level. And I think the level to which people are paying attention to a lot of that is a fairly moot point. I think in the end of the day, to Gabby's point, we're probably going to end up where we are right now at the end of this general election. And there's always going to be a bit of to-ing and fro-ing. But I don't think it's anything deeply.
Well, Fianna Fáil maintained that it is a strategic plan, that Fine Gael has research that says that for the first week what they should be doing is attacking them, and that then Simon Harris can row in and appear conciliatory as the peacemaker.
I saw that. It did sound terribly orchestrated. And sure, look it. I mean, it's all, as you say, Gabby, all gloves are off for the next 10 days and they're all going to do what they have to do. I think the meeting in Killorglin yesterday was quite priceless, and that whether that was a cunning ploy or not, I don't know. Pat, you're more experienced in these things than
I. Before we get Pat's take of this, let's just explain the meeting in Killorglin reference. This was that there was a picture, and I think it's on the front page of the Sunday Times.
There was a picture of Simon running over to Micheál, and Micheál Martin was out canvassing, Simon Harris was out canvassing, and that was the first part of the...
And Fianna Fáil are reportedly aggrieved because they say they were set up collegiate picture.
Yes,
right.
Exactly.
Okay. Now we're up to speed.
So I think Simon Harris ran over to Micheál. That's why they're annoyed.
Because he runs everywhere.
I think the conventional conclusion seems to be that this is phony mock battles to seek to differentiate themselves. Hold my jacket and let me at him. and that nobody takes it too seriously.
To what end?
But I must say, I have a different view. I think that the hierarchies of the respective parties have concluded some time ago that there is no doubt about the formation of the next government. And as a result, they are engaged in a struggle for who will be top dog. Mm. And I think that's the battle that's underway. And they need to be careful because they can damage their own credibility by continuing this. I mean, it seems to me very unfortunate that the Apple tax bonanza happened before the budget and before the general election. It contributed to the profligate nature of the budget. And now, whereas I see one of the parties, Fianna Fáil, I think, wants to decriminalise a small use of cannabis for personal use, and Fine Gael claimed to be upset by it. It seems to me that if they spend the next 2 weeks doling out money like the first week, the public are likely to conclude that they're all on the weed.
Oh, no.
So your take, therefore, is that this squabbling isn't a phony war. It is genuine. And what it's mercs and perks. It's cabinet seats. It's appointments. It's making sure that when the wrestle of numbers as to who gets what, it's jockeying for that position.
Yeah, they've concluded that the Sinn Féin boat has sailed in terms of offering the prospect of leading an alternative government. 18 months ago, it might have been different, but now there is a cap on a boundary has been set to the march of Sinn Féin. In those circumstances, the two parties are going to be the core. Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael are going to be the core of a new government. And in those circumstances, who is top dog is all there is to fight for. And I think that's what's underway. And they may find it difficult to rein it in if it continues on its present tone.
Well, in a minute, Gabby, you might walk us through the kind of giveaways because you're detailing some of them in the front of the Sunday and our first Joan. Yes.
But I think nothing will annoy the Irish voters more than this sense that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are taking it for granted that they will get back in. And I think that anyone listening to this now is probably going, hang on a second, I have not promised anything to anyone yet.
And Micheál Martin says as much in one of the papers.
I think it is important for anyone to really consider, and I know Gabby is going to go through it and has it in far more detail, everything that's been listed about the giveaways. And we always have this in a week before election, and it's 50,000 houses or 60,000 houses. And in the end, their promises we'll see whether they have to build the houses. We can easily promise a house. It's harder to build them. So there's a lot of things that need to be ironed out. But nothing can be taken for granted. And by nothing, I mean people's votes cannot be taken for granted.
But that's the very danger to their credibility.
That exactly, because there is this assumption that if they move into this with this assumption that they're going to get back in, that's where surprises get landed.
I don't understand that. How do you mean that's the danger to their credibility?
I mean that people will see this for what it is. There is no point in pretending that there wasn't a large measure of agreement on pretty much every issue that arose between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael during the last 4 years or during the last 8 years. And people know that. And when they see these mock battles, they do run the risk of damaging their own
case. But presumably it must be a difficult balance. I mean, if you are looking at a likely coalition partner, you cannot be seen to be so tied at or so welded to them that you can't get a cigarette paper between the parties. There must be some element of differentiation.
Well, I mean, it's a tight rope journey. There's no doubt about that. But I mean, it is a case of Fanta and Coke. And, you put forward your own best view of your what you've got to offer, but to pretend that there is a major ideological or policy differences between the two parties is no longer true. If it ever was true, it was true to some degree on things like Northern Ireland in the past. Fianna Fáil had a particular view, Fine Gael had a different view, but that's no longer the case. And this mock battle of who is the superior it will not cut itself.
And I think
with
that
thinking
that's,
voters,
that's the challenge now. And I think before we get ahead of ourselves, and I think the parties are conscious of this, like they're fighting for the number one vote now. I was talking to one Fine Gael strategist who said, "We have a valid and real point of difference. We don't want people to vote for Fianna Fáil. Anyone who is voting for Fianna Fáil is of F all use to me." I mean, it's really down to those last final seats. So you have to win the seats first before you can get to chat about who's in government or who's going to be the Taoiseach first or who gets what department. I want the number one vote. I don't want the transfer. And I want to tell people why I want the number one vote. So that's the thinking. And I also will make the point as well that there is, like, to Pat Rabbit's point, it's 100% the case that the differences between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are now so tiny that actually the top dogs in Fine Gael are actually saying, if we aren't going to government again with Fianna Fáil, then by the time the next election comes around, like, we seriously have to consider, is there any differences between us? And should actually we just get into one big group and just call it a day, Fianna Gael, or something along
now,
those lines.
Tell us that, because there has been lots of promises in respect of things like policy and implementation and things that are major issues, like, for instance, housing. But we're heading towards the giveaway part of the election. Pat Rabbit has already referenced the Fianna Fáil's desire to have decriminalised weed available to people. Fine Gael is going totally late show. £1,000 for every baby in the audience.
Yeah, so Taoiseach Simon Harris is interviewed by Niamh Horan in Sunday Independent. He's saying every baby born in Ireland would receive at least €1,000 lodged into a new savings account in their name. And of course, this comes as part of the manifesto that Fine Gael is launching today. It's the child savings scheme, which would be called the Acorn Savings Account. And that'll come into effect, of course, if Fine Gael is back in government. And I mean, these promises are getting quite fantastical as the days go on. We've had policy launches from all of the parties, not just Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael or Sinn Féin, but Social Democrats, Labour, People Before Profit, every single day. We've had the manifesto from Fianna Fáil come out. Fine Gael is today, Labour is today. We're still waiting on Sinn Féin's final manifesto, but they have the answers to everything. Of course, last week we heard this idea of using €10 billion. The Fine Gael would use €10 billion from the Apple tax to build housing and maybe put it into current expenditure. Like, I don't know how that necessarily works. And that started another row. Pascal Donoghue came out and said, well, the Fianna Fáil manifesto was costed. The costings are totally crazy. And Jack Chambers firing back and saying that's not the case at all. So, look, we've had promises galore. But I think when you look at even the drugs row, because it was brought up there very briefly, you know, Simon Harris is now saying, raising all these concerns about decriminalising cannabis and how he wouldn't be in favour of it at all. But like his own Fine Gael ministers, even a couple of months ago, were saying more or less the exact same things that Fianna Fáil are saying. So really, what are those differences and how expansive are they?
What's the logic of handing the children of the rich 1,000 quid?
As someone who does not have children, can I just flag that Budget Day is what I call the saddest day in the world for, as J.D. Vance would call me, the childless cat woman. It is the most triggering day of the year for your singleness, because it is the day that you realise that you are the country's cash cow. If you are not married and you have no children, you are a cash cow for everybody else. They will milk you for everything. And then I look at these headlines and going, way to win me over. And every time I see a budget giveaway, it is around... It's either childcare, and I believe we should support childcare. And yes, we should support children. And yes, I want to support young families getting access to homes. But heaven knows if you're the person who's only ever paying for it and never getting it, and it's not means tested, you kind of want to scream.
Well, what about the means tested bit of this, Pat? Because there are an awful lot of people in Ireland who are high on the hog. Why is the state going to hand their children 1,000 quid at birth?
Presumably because somebody thinks it's going to cause people to vote for them. I mean, the situation is that we have entered an era irreversibly of coalition government, and therefore parties will have to sit down after the election and agree what the platform for government is. And these differences are helpful because they will enable, during the negotiations, for some of the ideas, some of the dafter ideas that have come up, to be shed. And the proponent can go out and say, well, of course we would have done that, only for the other crowd wouldn't agree to it. So that's the only safeguard that is there.
It'll sicken the electorate though, won't it?
I think it will sicken a lot of the thinking electorate, you know, who are disappointed that in circumstances where we have amazingly turned around the economy at a pace that nobody could have anticipated. I mean, the desperate circumstances we were in the 2011-2016 government, when the government was advised by top civil servants that there was enough money to pay Garda and nurses and teachers for 5 months. That government laid the foundations for the most extraordinary reversal in our economic prospects. And the fear that thinking voters will have is that we're in danger of putting that at risk at a time when geopolitics were never more threatening in terms of what the future might hold for our foreign direct investment model, for example.
It's better to have money and to be talking about, I'm going to give 500 euro to Baby Boost, or I'm going to give 1,000 euro, than to be talking about, well, actually, we're going to cut pensions, we're going to cut the dole, we're going to cut all these supports for people. You know, in fairness, like, the country's doing relatively well. So even if it is quite annoying for voters to be looking on, and I suppose for journalists, you're kind of hearing these new, unbelievable, fantastical promises every day. It's good that we are in a space where we have money, I suppose.
But it is about the means testing. I think that is the real issue. I don't have a problem with it if it's means tested. But as you say, Anton, it's the giving it to people who just simply...
And child benefit is still given to everybody.
It's given to everybody, and we've enshrined that. And that's, okay, I'll nearly accept that. But this, yeah. Every time you have a new baby, I'm sorry, it just seems excessive.
Now, there's a text saying, after 40 years of voting, I have learned to never underestimate the stupidity of the general public when it comes to voting to change how things are done in this country. Another, I believe the public opinions will shift when the TV debates get underway. The election campaign so far has been very, very flat. You've been immersed in it, Kabir. Has it been flat?
It has been a little bit, like, apart from this infighting between Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, which is, we all know it is, like, Sinn Féin called a phony, and it is a little bit hard to believe, because we know they're going back government together, or more than likely to anyway. We still don't have our issue, you know, when you have, like, for example, pensions 4 years ago, that was the issue of the election. We might not even get an issue. And so there hasn't been really that much crack. We have obviously the party leaders up and down the country, and they're canvassing, and aren't they great? And they're getting their social media clips, and here they are talking to, you know, the pensioner and the teacher, and, oh, we're going to do all these things for you, and that's fine. But I think when it comes to political campaigning, we haven't really gotten our teeth into, like, politicians do expect that this coming week now is going to be a big week. We have the leaders' debate, the first leaders' debate tomorrow night.
This is the one with all 10?
10 party leaders. Oh, in it, which should be hopefully interesting.
You've been a party leader, Pat. Is there any gain in 10 people in a room talking with you? Can you get anything out of that?
No, not at all. No moderator could possibly handle 10 people.
But who misses out then?
People. I mean, there is an issue. For example, I saw one rather good debate on housing. And it was good in many aspects, except the how. How do you build those extra houses that it is now agreed that we need, 50 to 60,000 per annum? And the difficulty is there are capacity constraints, there are blockages in terms of planning, there are difficulties with the servicing of land, the problem of recruiting the workers to build the houses, and so on and so forth. And, you know, that's one of the, it seems to me that housing and the cost of living are the two major issues. And I think the media has a role as well in trying to focus the debate on those difficult issues. They are difficult. There's no point pretending there are easy solutions to them. But we have to get the supply of housing up. There is a danger that we will hand out so many supports that it's only serving to drive the price of houses.
Well, it's interesting. There's a piece in the front of the Business Post that reflects that, where there a developer is quoted as saying that they have the land to build on, but simply cannot build. We cannot build. Top developer lashes government on housing, saying simple things like infrastructure connection to Irish water, connection to the ESB grid where needed, planning permissions, that all of those relatively simple but Gordian bureaucratic problems are insurmountable.
I'd be quite confident that, you know, if we genuinely accepted that this is an emergency, and that the lead parties in the state put their minds to it, I think they could address that issue. I mean, if you're talking about the use of the Apple tax monies, I mean, the servicing of land and the acquisition of land, land seems to me to be central to it. We have the potential under the compulsory purchase order in terms of the acquisition of land. No government, including governments I was involved in, dealt with the Kenny report of 1973, which shows that if the exigencies of the public interest require it, then the state can intervene. And we do
1973,
Judge Kinney brought in the Kinney report that challenged this issue of the constitutional right to private property, and that report concluded that yes, that's true, private property is protected by the Constitution, but if the greater good of the public interest requires it, then the state can, within limits,
Labour bring it forward every couple of years,
intervene.
And 51 years in which to do
clearly.
It.
Yeah.
By the way, on that topic of Labour, before we go to the break, quickly, your own party languishing at 4%.
I beg your pardon?
Your own form of...
Oh, languishing,
party,
I'm sorry.
Languishing at 4%.
Yeah. Well, obviously, I would rather it weren't so, but I think...
Is there any prospect of it not being so?
I think there are some prospects from the panel of young candidates that have come forward, and I think a more reasoned approach now by voters to the role that Labour played in the last government that they were members of. And, you know, the performance of that government will only be recognised when the history is written in 20 years' time. I mean, the fact of the matter is
wait to come back up 4%.
It is. But, you know, there was a breakaway in terms of the Social Democrats. There is very little in policy difference between the two parties. And I think, you know, there are a number of young candidates that hold out the prospect of winning seats this time.
Text to say you have touched a nerve, Joan. Hooray for that single lady on your panel. The single lady on the panel in question being Joan Mulvihill, digitalisation lead at Siemens. Hooray for the single lady on the panel. I feel exactly the same. Single people seem to be expected to pay for many others' life choices. While you are the subject of attention, Joan, after the break, given that you're digitalisation expertise, want to talk a little bit about this migration that is happening from Elon Musk's Twitter to Blue Sky, because it seems to be happening in force at this point. Joan, putting on your IT expert hat, there is an interesting exodus occurring over the past while, which is there's been some concern about the direction of travel of Twitter. There's been a couple of false dawns, people talking about Threads, people talking about Mastodon. Over the last day, we have seen a huge shift towards this new platform, Blue Sky. Who and why?
Well, me and you, because the direction of travel of X was apparently downwards. A toilet. Somebody said to me, Joan, it's like a toilet on there. I said, I've seen cleaner toilets on day three of Electric Picnic than some of the stuff that is the sewer that is X right now. It has become a huge conversation, as you say, in the last while, but particularly I've noticed in the last week. It was a friend of mine, Dermot Casey from the Industrial Research and Development Group, put up a post the other day saying he's out. And I said, you know what? This is the nudge I needed. I'm out. And I could deleted both the apps. I moved on to BSkyB. I understand Blue Sky, rather. Why did I say that? Blue Sky. And I moved over to there.
BSkyB.
I know. It's like, oh, why did that come into my head? I don't know. Blue Sky. This is the problem. So I moved over to Blue Sky. I haven't really been using it yet. I've just started following you. You can reciprocate. But yeah, things people are just, and it's got exactly the same look and feel as the old Twitter. When you use it, the user experience is identical, but already I can see going through it, it is less vile, less toxic. And then obviously that was earlier in the week. I'm on the National Council of the PR Institute of Ireland. I was talking to a number of my fellow council members the other evening. A lot of us individually and professionally have been looking about whether or not the future is on X and whether ethically I could actually bring myself to stay on it. I said, I'm done.
We've seen entities like The Guardian leaving it for ethical reasons.
And then The Guardian,
well,
the very next day on the paper, it was all over the news. The Guardian had left. Silicon Republic have also left. That was really interesting for me because they are a tech publication. You know, they would have been early doors onto social media, particularly onto Twitter. They were probably one of the first people I would have followed when I started as the CEO of the Irish Internet Association a million years ago. When they made that decision as well, I just kind of felt very validated from a tech point of view. Because it's not about mainstream news too. It's saying a lot about the technology companies not supporting them. And I just think X has just gone so vile now.
But I suppose the relevance of it, particularly, John, because people may look and say, well, look, you can be on Bebo, MySpace, Threads, Meta, yeah, Facebook, whatever you like, what difference does it make? The significance from an X perspective is that it tends to be a leading predictor in terms of media coverage. It's very much used by the political system, very much used by senior media. And it is they who seem to be migrating to Blue Sky.
Yes. So that was interesting. Somebody sent me a post the other day as well saying, oh, it looks like a lot of advertisers now in the US are going back onto X because they want to curry favor with power now. And I said, well, not sure it's going to be any good to them if consumers of those brands that they're trying to appeal to have moved off it. So I think what you're going to end up with is a polarization of the good, the moral, the decent and the just will move off X and they will move to Blue Sky or whatever they're choosing to move to. And the political movements who want to appeal to them and those kind of that side of the field will move with them. And they will have one echo chamber on the right and you'll have another echo chamber on the left. I mean, obviously, Donald Trump set up his own Truth.
Truth Social.
Yeah, it's Truth Social. But I mean, he's there with X now. He's back on it. So I'm not even sure whether they're just cannibalizing one another.
But the downside risk then is further polarization.
But
the far right goes
to X. I do think that there is going to be, you're going to end up with a polarization again, and we're going to have an echo chamber of what I would call the good, and then you've got an echo chamber of the other. And I mean, but the other had gotten so bad. I heard some stories the other day, like I've had nasty stuff myself on X, and I had to a certain extent stopped using it really. And so when I say I've moved over to Blue Sky, I haven't really engaged with it this week because I've realised I actually don't need, do I really need another social media platform? I said, if you want to find me for work, I'm on LinkedIn. If you want to find me for art, I'm on Instagram. So did I need a third one? And maybe people have actually just realised, have I got too much now? And maybe two channels is okay.
Text say, Ireland has garnered hundreds of billions in taxes over the past 30 years. From an infrastructure, what have we to show? Dublin is the only capital city in Europe without a metro system. Mm-hmm. We have one of the worst motorway systems in Europe. Our health services are a shambles. Theoretically, we are one of the wealthiest countries in the world. We can boast among the highest paid civil and public servants in the world, but little ends. Do you accept that?
I don't know. I don't accept that. I mean, the country has been transformed from the time that I went into politics first. The country has been transformed. I mean, the investment in education has borne tremendous fruits. I mean, the skills and agility of the workforce is remarkable now. Yes, of course, there are problems. There are huge challenges infrastructure-wise. That's why I say that it would have been better if the Apple bonanza had landed after the election and people have time to work out where might some of that money be best invested. Clearly, there are blockages that are preventing the housing liftoff that is necessary. That's a priority. The necessity to continue to invest in science and technology. I think tremendous change has been seen in this country, and there's no point in pretending living in the black hole of Calcutta.
Can I just add to that? So the last time I was on, Anton, I told you I was on my way to London and for a few days for work, for something else. And I was over there and I noticed something. I went out for a run every morning, as I do, and the footpaths in the one of the wealthiest suburbs just outside London were crumbling. They were falling apart. They were patched together. I run with Mullingar Harriers and I'm out every day on every footpath around Mullingar and I am running on pristine tarmac. I am running past new houses that are going up at the rate of knots. I am running past the Irish Manufacturing and Research Centre that is there. And I look at this small Midlands town and how far we have come infrastructurally. And I just think there's a lot to be said for where
we're at. It would be great to have a metro all the same.
It would indeed. I agree with you, Gavia.
Joan Gavia and Pat, thank you very much. That is Joan Mulvihill, Digitalisation Lead at Siemens. Gavia Gadaviscacha, who is editor, or rather, who is Polkar. Gavia,
yeah,
give it a while. And Pat Rabbit, former leader of the Labour Party.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.